Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m. I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life. From the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We're going to be discussing those politicians that are working for you and those politicians who are working against you. And just because they're a Democrat or because they are a Republican and you have voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we're going to make sure we bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to let you ask them questions. We're also going to be discussing education system, healthcare, the military, sports, science. By the way, healthcare, do you have it? Do you need it? Are you 26 years old still on your family's healthcare plan? Or as the Progressive Party says, Obamacare? So sit back. From the cities, the county, the state, and the entire nation and the world, this is a classroom experience. Get that pencil. Get that piece of paper. And we'll make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson. Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Count Basie, for the lead-in. It is the Memorial Day weekend. Every time I think of Memorial Day, I think of Jaws, the movie. I think it was 75 when it came out. My oldest daughter, I think, was 4, getting ready to turn 5. And I took her to the beach, Jones Beach, in Brooklyn, New York. And I can't swim, but I love the water. And I was taking her out, and she would say, Daddy, go out farther. I had her on top of my shoulders. And I was going out to water, where the water was coming up. I had to stand on my toes because the water was up to my mouth. And I was just jumping in the water. She was just kicking. And, oh, man, we had a fabulous time. That, I believe, was a Friday. And that Saturday, I took her to see Jaws. I went with her. I mean, I went with her. I took her. I did not go in the water for 4 years after I saw it. I did no way. I looked at it, but I went on the beach, no bathing suit. I wore regular clothes. I wasn't up when they said that most shark attacks occur within 3 feet of water. There was no way that I was going in there. Nada. And, you know, I didn't even want to take a cruise. And, you know, I was in the Air Force. You know, I mean, we were flying over Asia and, you know, I don't mind flying because the plane falls out of the sky, you're dead when it hits the water. The sharks can pick the dead bodies, but it wasn't about to get me alive. And when he told that story of George about the Indianapolis who delivered the bomb to the air station that was going to transport it with the Nola Gay, I believe. The Indianapolis was sunk by a Japanese submarine, and they didn't report it missing for, I think, 5 days. And I think it was 11 or 1,200 that went in the water, and only 300 and something were picked out. The sharks got the rest. So there wasn't any chance of me going in the water. Unless I was dead before I hit the water, or dead on impact. But hey, I gotten over that. I love cruising. I love, I went on my first cruise 2 years ago. My wife and I, it was fabulous. But I need to have, if somebody's out there listening, and you can call in at 646-716-5242 and tell us something about your experience and what you think about joys in the water. Are you afraid of it? Let's see some of the headlines we have today. Oh, we got a lot today, you know. I'm going to get back to the holiday weekend, but we got a lot today. These fool Republicans, they must think that we are all just completely brain dead. I mean, it's just besides me. They now, Ryan, this moo-moo, on Thursday, May the 10th, it was Thursday of that week, the Republicans' budget bill passed, in which they want to hike federal employees' pension contributions by 5%. Now, hey, that's nice. You know, you get 5 more percentage points in your pension. You retire, you know. But there is a little catch. They don't care about federal workers. There's something called the 2012 Sequester Replacement Reconciliation Act. That's the 2012 Sequester Replacement Reconciliation Act. And this is proposed by Representative Paul Ryan, the moo-moo from Wisconsin, in which he seeks to shift $98 billion in budget cuts that are scheduled to take effect in January away from the defense and other social programs. And as part of this plan, to avoid those cuts, because you see, these are automatic cuts in defense budget because they didn't get together and come up with a regular budget. So this would include $55 billion in defense cuts. And the Ryan bill would phase in a 5% contribution hike to both the federal employees' retirement system and the civil service retirement system over 5 years. Because, see, the federal government has two retirement systems now. Well, there are people who are still in the civil service retirement system who did not buy into FERS, because FERS was a major, major ripoff of employees. This was started under Reagan, and this was another way to take money and cut the benefits and wages for federal workers. See, under the Civil Service Retirement Act, if you worked there your entire life with the federal government, you don't get Social Security, because that was not part of it. So when FERS came in, when they acted FERS, which is the Federal Employees Retirement System, they now offer you a chance to get Social Security. But you don't get the same pay. See, that's where they made the deal. And they figured that most people will die before they even see that money when they retire. Now, this bill would effectively cut federal employees by 5% and leave FERS employees contributing 5.8% of each paycheck towards their pension. Now, all those that are still in the civil service retirement system, they will contribute 12%. Right now, it's, you know, half and half. We contribute half, and the feds contribute half. He's going to cut that out. So the, instead of the normal rate that you would contribute, you're going to contribute, if you're with FERS, an additional 5.8. And if you're with CRS, CSR, the retirement system, civil service retirement system, you will contribute 12%. And this bill was approved 218-199. The American Federation of Government Employees and the National Active and Retirement Federal Employees Association denounced the bill and rejected it. Okay. The NARFE, I believe it is, which is the Federal Employees Union, they said that the cut to federal employees is offensive and it angered every single person in the federal government. And the political director, Beth Morton, told House lawmakers the bill is unconscionable. So they're going to take that 5% that they're going to supposedly go into the federal employees' retirement system and give it to the Defense Department to make up for the cuts that are automatic. Now, we have to, as Ryan says, we have to avoid hollowing out our nation's military. Because, you know, we need more wars in countries that don't even know us or that have nothing to do with us. We need plenty more wars. And here's the problem. They're cutting back on the amount of people that are in the military. So now let me get this picture straight in my head. They're cutting back the amount of people that are in the military, but yet they said they need more money for the military. They keep saying that the military population, those that populate the military, the physical people, is what's cost us. That the equipment doesn't cost that much. The problem is they're making more the equipment more and more self-conscious, and we're going to get into that. Self-conscious, I mean, they act on their own or by one or two people. They can operate a whole army now, practically, through computers, sitting in Washington, D.C. They can operate drones. They have tanks now that are supposed to be, they're trying to operate with a computer. They have ships they can operate with a computer. So this is the reason why we want to downgrade the amount of physical officers and enlisted men in the military. The problem is that this goes way back to the to Darth Vader, otherwise known as Dick Cheney. When he started in the government. Now, there was a story about this, I believe it was on Rachel Maddow 2 nights ago. And she went through the whole sinister plot, what Darth Vader did, how he got involved. This was way back during the Reagan administration. Now, you got to remember, Dick Cheney had 7 deferments. Yeah, you know, he don't want to risk his own butt because he had better things, quote, I had better things to do. Okay? So what happened was that when Reagan, and this is a little story which I'm going to get to, we got time. the Reagan wanted to send troops to Nicaragua. But the Boland Amendment was passed where, because the House and Senate did not want us to go fight a war, especially a war like that, which would be a covert war in Nicaragua, into foreign soil. That's when we had actual Republicans with half a brain. They did not want to start wars. So the Boland Amendment said you can't send any troops anywhere without our approval. And we don't want you to go to Nicaragua, so we're not giving you approval. So what Reagan did was unconscionable. He took, we all know him, Colonel the dreadful Ollie North and Admiral Poindexter. They went and sold guns to guess who? They sold guns to the Iranians, the ones 2 years before held our hostages for 2 years. And that money was secretly shifted to Nicaragua so they could fight the Sandinistas down there. Meanwhile, this all came out, and now they have government investigations all over the place. And what happened was, this is a story I want to get to, why we're in where we are right now. Everybody said this is illegal. People were brought up in charges. But, of course, Reagan wasn't illegal. Reagan said it wasn't illegal. He used the same defense as Nixon. If the president does it, it's not illegal. Well, it was. And people went to jail. And the only representative in the entire Congress who wrote in defense of what the president did was a little known nobody with 7 deferments from Wyoming named Representative Dick Cheney. Because he had a long-range plan. His long-range plan was he worked for a little-known entity at the time. Well, Halliburton didn't exist yet, but the question came up, could, we're fighting in wars, and we need to have supplies, we need to have people who cook, we need to have people, medical doctors, we need to build places for soldiers to sleep, and we have all these different people that are doing all that. Wouldn't it be simpler if we could get one entity to do all those things? And they said, yeah, Halliburton. Dick Cheney is the one that brought this to the forefront because he was invested with Halliburton. That's how Halliburton got into this whole shenanigans. So now, Halliburton in Iraq, they were in charge of the medical, they were in charge of building services, they were in charge of the electrical, they were in charge of food, they were in charge of everything. Everything. Privately contracted. We never had a problem in the 2 previous wars and even in the Korean War. One person didn't control the entire destiny of our war. And we've seen what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan where Halliburton's controlling everything. Right now, there's over $100 billion missing of federal funds that was shipped over in 2 C-130 aircraft that landed in the ground in dollar bills, not in gold bullion, not in euros. It was $200 billion is missing, and that has not been accounted for. And we have the same people who want to get in to this federal government right now who were all part of that disappearance of that money. And guess what? When Dick Cheney became the chairman of Halliburton, it came through. It came to pass when he left the Congress. Halliburton ran everything during the war. And to make sure that it ran correctly, when George W. was running for office, he asked Dick Cheney to find him a vice president. That was never going to happen. Dick Cheney had to be there because that was the way that he made sure that Halliburton got everything. He picked himself as vice president, and bingo, we're in a war. And guess who's in charge of everything in the war zone? Halliburton. Which brings us back to Ryan and why he wants to take this money, this $5 billion, which is $55 billion, which is going to amount to 5% from all federal workers to pay for this, the cuts in the defense budget. Because if they cut the defense budget, that $55 billion is just about what Halliburton made so far in Iraq and Afghanistan. And if they're the only ones who are supplying all the needs to fight a war, do you actually think they want to give that up? Ain't going to happen. It is not going to happen. So here we are. Representative Steny Hoyer, the majority leader in the he was the majority leader. He's no longer the majority leader in the House, but because Nancy Pelosi is. But he denounced the bill before the full House and said it would make federal employees second-class citizens. He said Republicans are wrong to keep cutting federal employees' pay and benefits while refusing to raise taxes on the wealthy or cut agricultural subsidies. We got people out on farms that are getting paid not to grow. We got the oil companies out there getting paid for something that they don't need to get paid for. Subsidies. You have subsidies when you need to help someone, not after the fact. And ladies and gentlemen, it's that portion of the show now where it's Grace's Corner.
Yes.
Hello.
Well, hi, Michael. How are you?
Mrs. Galloway, how are you?
It's just fine. I am
you
just
are.
Fine. Yes, and yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. In Texas right now.
So,
that's the reason why I called a little late. The plane just landed and we had to go through all of that nonsense. But anyway, okay, so what are we going to vent about today?
What is the deal with the Ryan bill wanting to cut $55 billion out of the federal employees?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, they're going to balance the budget and they're going to cut the deficit on the backs of the working poor and on the backs of the federal employees that are making that much money. You do realize that every single federal employee is a multi-gazillionaire, and they all have three houses or four houses.
Oh, absolutely.
Each one of them is like 4,000 square feet. You realize that, right? So let's just go ahead and cut the benefits, cut the pay of the federal employees. Because, I mean, that's what the Republicans would have you believe, is that the federal employees are the ones that are absolutely just draining the country. And then we'll go ahead and give more tax cuts to the rich, which they've always called job creators. That's just the plan.
Well, the thing is that this bill would also require new federal employees who are hired after 2012 with fewer than 5 years of previous federal service to immediately pay a 5.8% to the FERS plan with no phase-in for new employees hired before 2013.
Yeah, so in essence,
this would eliminate FERS Social Security supplement, which is now paid to the FERS employees who voluntarily retire after reaching 62.
Right. So in essence, what they're doing is they're asking people to pay to be employed.
That's right. And you see, it's just like they're doing the same thing that they want to do to the postal people. They want them to prepay.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. I mean,
what they're trying to do is, again, they want to bankrupt. They want to bankrupt every single union that's left. And the postal union they went after, and they've done quite well. In bankrupting them. And the most awful thing, the most egregious thing, really, when you think about it, is that the Congress actually pushed it through. They approved it. The Republicans did, I admit, but many Democrats went right along with it, too.
Well,
and they approved
I called Larry Kissel's office. Was Larry Kissel one of those? He didn't vote for this, did he?
I don't know, but I think we'll have to check his record and see.
Well, I have
a
call in for
him. It wouldn't surprise me. I don't know.
I am waiting to hear from the Congressman Kissel's office because I on two things. I wanted to hear him about this this new project of Ryan's. I don't think it's going to pass in the Senate.
Well, it better not. All I can say is it better not. And if any Democrats cross over, it would be extremely embarrassing to the Democratic Party. Very much
so. And now we also have, you heard about the new spy center.
The new spy.
Have you heard about that?
No, I have not heard about that, but I've been on the road,
too. Oh, my gosh. Well, it's the National Security Agency, the number one spy center in the entire world, is building the largest, most covert, and potentially the most intrusive intelligence agency ever building in Utah.
Utah. Of course Utah.
It is going to be over $2 billion, and it's scheduled to be up and running in 2013. And it has servers and routers that store it's a bottomless database where they will be able to tap into every single communication device that's in the United States. All private emails, all cell phones, all Google searches, any searches. They will be able to look at all receipts that you do online, all your itineraries that you book, your bookstore purchases, your digital pocket. You have a pocket diary, your digital reader, anything that is what you call a process and sent in the air.
Right.
Now,
so
we have a show like that on TV now. It's called Person of Interest.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen that? Yes, I have.
So the whole deal is what we've been talking about before, during the 60s and the 70s, particularly when we concerned that Nixon was tapping all our telephones. This is becoming a reality. And I joke with people when I talk to them on the phone, and I say, between you and me and whoever's listening in, but it's no longer a joke anymore.
Not a joke.
You honestly don't know who's listening in.
It's reality.
Yeah, and
it
that's
is
really
reality.
It's a very, very, very scary thing. I'd like to get back to North Carolina. I'd like to get back to our convention.
Well, that's the next thing. What are we going to do with this convention?
Well, here's the thing that's happened. Did you know that North Carolina has not been named as the host, one of the host states, right?
What?
Even though the convention.
I will run that by you again.
Even though the convention is being held in North Carolina, North Carolina is not one of the host states that Obama is definitely going, Mr. and Mrs. Obama are definitely going to attend the ball. The ball. Yeah, the ball, but not only that. To attend the
the parties, okay, because you know that conventions, you have parties every single night, and North Carolina is not one of them. Illinois, Ohio, Iowa, Florida, they are, but North Carolina is not. North Carolina has been lumped in with South Carolina, Georgia, and I think it's Kentucky or Tennessee or one of the other lesser states that are definitely a red state. So we've been lumped in with all the red states. So that does that tell you what's going on? Now, let me tell you something else. Vice President Joe Biden was in Charlotte yesterday, right? He was.
Right.
Generally,
right.
When this happens, the vice president or whoever comes down for fundraising is introduced by the chair of the North Carolina Democratic Party. The chair was there, David Parker.
He was there?
Yes, but Joe Biden was but invisible, because Joe Biden was introduced by the OSA regional director. Okay,
uh-huh.
So what does that tell you? That tells you what we've been saying all along. If we do not do something about this horrible situation and this person who has placed himself above the president, North Carolina is going to go down in flames. I mean, really, you know, and for whoever's listening to this program, if you are SEC members, and if you did this, and if you thought that voting for David Parker to keep him on his chair was going to just blow over, that everything was going to be fine, you're sorely mistaken. Sorely mistaken, because here we are again. Okay, the press, all the press wanted to do was ask questions about the sexual harassment thing and the David Parker thing. Vice President Biden took no questions. And you know that.
Well, that's very good.
You know that is very, very much that's alien to Joe Biden.
Oh,
do not
absolutely.
Take questions from the press.
Please.
Okay?
Yeah, how his shoes are. He'll tell you something about his shoes.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he likes to talk.
Absolutely. He loves to talk. And he's brilliant. And he's a brilliant man. And I love him.
Oh, yeah,
I
absolutely.
Think he's great at what he really is great. But took no questions. And this is what is going to happen. This is why I advocated and still continue to advocate that we have that David Parker needs to step down. And I will say this and say this and say this. The state convention and the SEC meeting is going to be coming up June, I think it's the 16th and the 17th. And I will continue to say it. And I will say to David Parker's face too, he needs to step down. He needs to do the right thing and step down. And June Mabry needs to get off her, how David Parker pushed, and she needs to just step back and realize what she said and what all these people have said about the Council of State being conspirators to steal the tax check off money. What she was saying is that David Parker and all these other pro-Parker faction was talking about how their vote, their wanting to keep Parker, would be a vote against the establishment. Okay? Well, hello? The establishment are the precise people we need to get reelected.
I mean,
right?
this is so. It would be funny if it was so sad.
It was funny exactly.
It's disgraceful. This is really disgraceful.
It's fodder for the Republicans. They
how
love
do you have?
Fighting.
Oh, of course. How do you have a state that is the host for the convention?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even have their own constituents to have a party. How do you?
Yeah.
I mean, this makes no sense.
Yeah. When you have delegates, you have people that. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. When you have delegates who may or may not have voted to keep David Parker, I don't know.
That's right.
Right. So what I'm saying to people is you cannot be both. You cannot be for Parker and for Obama. You have to make
absolutely
your choice.
Correct. My understanding was that at the at this hastily called meeting
the Mother's Day weekend
disaster, that they said this was to show that no one could tell us what to do. I mean, What does that mean?
Does that mean? No one can tell you what to do. What does that mean? So you're going to jeopardize the party, jeopardize the state, and potentially the nation and the presidency? No one can tell you what to do? You know, I say to people, think before you speak. Think before you speak and think before you do. Because saying something like that is just plumb stupid.
I'm sorry, but it is just plumb damn stupid.
Okay? But the problem is
because
it looks like.
Because here's the deal. The deal is the president showed up to Chapel Hill to talk about student loans. All the press wanted to talk to him about was the sexual harassment case and David Parker. Okay, that's all they wanted to talk about. If David Parker stays in his chair, what is going to happen is that if he shows up at the convention, he will be the focus, not the Obama, not the Obama administration, not what Obama is trying to do. If he doesn't show up at the convention, then it will be all about why is he not at the convention. As long as this man is chair, he needs to step down, he needs to move away, he needs to move to Tennessee or Arizona, whatever the hell it is. He doesn't have to move, but he just needs to do the right thing.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
He is not going to force the hand of the White House by thinking that 269 people, delegates, 269 state executive committee members who were bamboozled, the majority of them were proxies, who were bamboozled by him and by whoever it was that spread the story about the conspiracy theory of the, what they called the Gang of Six. Can you believe that? They called the Council of State the Gang of Six. Call them that. What an incendiary phrase. They need to not do, they need to understand, people need to understand that as long as they stay on the David Parker train, they are actually causing problems for the president, because I'm saying to everyone, I will not, as an individual, and this is the reason why I'm speaking up so much, I as an individual will not permit my president to become ensnared by the press in this horrendous and horrible scandal. I will not do it. I will do everything that I can. Everything that I can to make sure that this is corrected.
Well, see, the thing is that this, you know, it was like it is me who's important, not even the state party.
Not even the state party.
Not the national party. Not not the president.
Not the country.
It is me.
Not the state, not the country, not the president. It is me. Exactly. Exactly.
Absolutely.
It is,
this was
it
a
is like Louis XIV. Like Louis XIV saying, the state is me. Okay? That is what he's saying.
Yeah,
and he's expecting, he's really expecting that everybody will come around, that this will all blow over, everyone will come around, and they will say, oh, yes, well, fine, you're back in the fold. Well, he's not. He's not. He's still persona non grata with the host committee, right, the DNC host committee.
Right.
So he's still removed from that. That's number one. And then
was the mayor introduced? Was Anthony Fox introduced when he was here? Or was he there?
No, I was not there. I was not there.
Oh,
but I was
okay.
told.
Right.
No, I was. I did do this horrible thing called work, right? We gotta work, right? Yeah, and see the people have. I asked them to please think logically. All right, think very, very logically. The accusation that the Council of State manipulated the tax checkoff money, the accusation is they manipulated this whole scenario, that Jay Parmley and David Parker were set up, that they, the Council of State, set them up, set those two up, wanted them to be gone, got rid of, because they wanted the tax checkoff money. That is the scandal. That is a scandalous statement that is being spread by this faction, this pro-Parker faction.
Right.
Okay,
well, you know,
now, Gary Pierce, who is a Jim Hunt protege, said, listen, you know, we need to know how much, who authorized the payment, when did you know it, who authorized the payment, how much was paid, and please, you know, don't blame the political enemies, because that's something that Nixon would do. You know what I mean? And that's what Parker's doing. He's blaming his political enemies. So who are his political enemies? He's accusing the governor and Elaine Marshall and Lieutenant Governor Walter Dalton and Janet Cowell and June Atkinson and Beth Woods of being his enemies? Oh, Pucky. You know? Oh, Pucky. I'm sorry. So what were you going to say,
Michael? It is. What more can I say? No. Well, what you're saying is that what you're saying is here we have, and we're not talking about, oh, this tax checkoff money. We're talking about $2 billion? I don't think so. You know, that's the first thing. The second thing is, Why?
We're talking about $1.2 million divided by two, which translates to $650,000 divided among the gang of six, as they call them, which would be what, a little over $100,000 per person for the campaign. Now, just think about it logically, okay? $1,000 per person, compared, or even $650,000, compared to the $25 million minimum that the Obama campaign is going to pour into the state. And guess what? Everyone is going to be on the Obama ticket, right? Everyone's on the Obama ticket. So now, not so much. So now let's face this also. The DNC has pulled their ads out of North Carolina.
I was just about to bring that up. Yes.
Yeah.
I was just about to bring that up. You're right.
Yeah.
They pulled their ads. Now, they
pulled
their ads. Now, why? Why do you think they pulled their ads? I mean,
it's
just saying, you know, as you said, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that.
Right.
But it's hopeless. Because now, why would you want to contribute to a dysfunctional state government? Why would you want to participate in it?
Right.
I mean, it makes no sense. I mean, here you are in North Carolina, and they have Ohio is having a place, Florida's got a place. Where's North Carolina?
Iowa. North Carolina is lumping South Carolina. Yeah, exactly. So here's another.
And South Carolina, unbelievable. Hey, Noah, I'd like you to explain what this tax checkoff money actually is for those people who don't know.
So the tax checkoff money is when you fill out your taxes, you're asked, do you want to contribute? Do you want $3 of your tax check to go to the party of your choice? So if you're a Democrat, then you check Democrat. If you're a Republican, you check Republican. And $3 doesn't come out of your taxes, doesn't come out of your refund. It's just, you know, money that goes to the political party of your choice. Well, there is that statute that there was a statute in existence that stipulated that this tax checkoff money should be divided 50% to the party and 50% theoretically to be dispensed among the remaining 13 districts in what we in the GOTV effort. Okay. Well, in 2009, this was and this tax checkoff money was to be managed by a committee, and the committee was chair of the North Carolina Democratic Party, three other members, and 13 district chairs. Well, of course, if you divide it that way, then clearly the money would be split 50-50, 13 district chairs, and then, you know, because the 13 district chairs would outweigh, right? Their vote would completely would rule. Well, in 2009, this law was changed, okay? And the Tax Checkoff Committee now...
And how was it changed? How was it changed?
Well, we'll get to that in a little bit. But this law was changed, and it was changed so that an additional 13 members would be added to this tax checkoff committee, so that those additional 13 members would negate the 13 district chairs. And the 13 district members, the additional 13 district members, would be added and named, are you ready for this, at the discretion of the state party chair. What does that tell you? That tells district chairs can kiss their money goodbye. Goodbye. Okay.
And who was the chair at the time?
That was David Young. But David Young has nothing to do with the introduction of the amendment. Okay. It had nothing to do with it. In point of fact, what happened is that when this passed, Governor Perdue spoke to David Young, and Governor Perdue said to David Young, recommended strongly that he not name the additional 13 members, because she said this just would not, she was concerned enough about the district chairs and concerned enough about the grassroots people to say, let's not do this. So David Young just sat on it, and he never named the additional 13 people. Okay?
Right.
Now, this law was changed. It did not come, this amendment, this proposal for the amendment, did not come from the House of Representatives. It did not come from the Senate. It did not come from North Carolina's House, nor did it come from North Carolina's Senate. It came from someone outside of the General Assembly. Okay?
What?
So, yeah, from someone outside of the General Assembly. And then there are two names that keep coming up. But when I talk to people, there are two names that keep coming up. But the one name that comes up regularly and more consistently is that of David Parker. So I don't have the proof, but more and more people are saying to me that it was David Parker that who suggested that this additional team members be named. Okay? Now, once you change the rules of the game, once you change the rules of the tax checkoff committee, the person that's in power, the person that has total control of the checkoff money is the chair, because it's him, it's three other members that he already has. It's him, three other members that he or she, that's the chair of the party, already names, plus an additional 13. So it's the chair, plus he gets to name 16 additional members, which completely and absolutely negates and nullifies the district chair's vote.
Can't do that in any organization.
It's now part of the statute. It's now part of the statute, so he can. Okay? Now part of the statute. Yeah, you see, here's the thing. You don't like the law, change it.
See, the question I have is, though, if that was the case, and now why would the representatives want that law changed and now want to take the money?
No, because the representatives did not want to take the money. They wanted the argument that was presented to them was this. All along, up until forever, you know, the tax checkoff money, the entire sum, has gone to the North Carolina Democratic Party, which they needed money for operational costs.
Right.
They needed the money for, you know, salaries, for the keeping the lights on, for paper, for the phones, for everything. Just, you know, for basic operational costs. They needed it. Now, a budget of $1.2 million is nothing. Nothing. That is peanuts, because most, as you know, most corporations or most companies require $5, $6, $7 million. I mean, especially, you know, so 1.2 is nothing. They still need it to keep the lights on. Now, when you're thinking about JJ, everyone says, oh, Jefferson Jackson dinner. Okay, Jefferson Jackson dinner brings in a lot of funds. Well, actually, the most that Jefferson Jackson brings in is maybe $100,000, $150,000. Which is a nice substantial amount. It's a goodly amount. But out of that $150,000 or so, money comes from sponsors. You have to have the sponsors that will actually pay for the venue and pay for the food, et cetera. Well, guess what? This year, big sponsors are backing out. They're backing out, not only of JJ, but they're just backing out from donating to the Democratic Party. Okay, ever since this whole debacle, this garbage occurred, you've got big donors backing out. They're voting with their pocketbooks. I don't blame them. And the reason why they're doing it is not to harm the Democratic Party. The reason they're doing it is because they want to make a statement. Look, we're not going to be part and parcel of ensnaring our president when he comes to North Carolina. We're not going to do this. Okay, we're going to show the president that we are behind him. We're not going to allow him to be ensnared, and we're not going to allow him to be, you know, to have this thing hanging over his head. We want it gone. And that's essentially it.
So what's the what is the alternative? The Council of State. What can they do about this now?
Well, the Council of State does not have very much to do. This has to come from the grassroots. Now, think about this. Of the little over 500 people that were at this convention, the majority were proxies, and the majority had no idea who to vote for, what to vote for.
Right.
And
what
happened essentially was that David Parker came, he was not on the agenda, but he, you know, inserted himself into the agenda, and he made this big old rah-rah speech, and so everyone voted for him. Well, not everyone, but, you know, he got the majority of the vote. Not a mandate, he got the majority of the vote.
I think it was like a 33, 35 vote difference.
It's something like that, right. And so what needs to happen is this needs to come from the grassroots level. Okay, we as the formal SEC, the people who are part of the SEC, who know what's going on, we're the ones that have, we're the ones that it's in our hands now. That's what something we have to do.
Why hasn't they? The only alternative that they have is the council review.
But the council review takes a long time. It does.
I wish I could say,
let's do the council review. Let's pull it together and let's do it right now. It's possible. I mean, it's possible. I'm not saying it's not possible.
Well, we're not talking about in a county where two people are arguing in a mm-hmm. county party. We're talking about
the state
Democratic Party chair.
Right, I agree.
I can't believe that it would take this long.
Well, by the way, did everything wrong. People say he
Absolutely.
Did nothing wrong. Well, he did everything wrong.
Of course
he violated Section 4.05 of the Plan of Organization clearly states that he must inform the State Executive Council of any matters that require decision. He did not. He made the decision on his own. Section 4.06 stipulates that it's only the State Executive Council that can approve expenditures of the money. Okay. Absent a decision from the State Executive Council, David Parker had no right and no authority to authorize payment from the party funds. He did. He authorized payment from the party funds to Adrian Ortega. Right. So he did two things wrong. Now, the next thing that David Parker did was he claimed, that he could not violate the agreement, the non-disclosure agreement. But when it suited him, he said, okay, I can't violate it. I couldn't do anything because it would have violated the non-disclosure agreement. So when it suited him, that's what he said. But then when it also suited him, he disclosed, he spilled his guts to the press. So, David Park, you cannot have it both ways. You've got to pick one or the other. You cannot have it both ways.
Didn't he write this non-disclosure because was he the lawyer that put it together?
I don't know. It was either he or the lawyer for the Democratic Party. And here's another thing that he did also. Okay, so he said often that he was against the settlement agreement, but he did so because the attorney advised him to. Now, we've not heard from the attorney. Okay, we've not heard from the attorney.
The attorney works for him. What are we talking about here? Regardless,
even if the attorney had suggested that indeed the settlement be reached, it was incumbent upon David Parker to tell the State Executive Council, according to Sections 4.05 and 4.06. It was incumbent upon him to tell. Okay, now, this whole tax checkoff thing, that is just a diversion. It is a distraction from the real issue, and the real issue is that David Parker did everything wrong.
Right.
Everything wrong. And I hope he's listening into this program right now.
Well,
I really do.
I called him, he was listening last week, must have been the week before last, and left word for him to call in that we wanted to hear from him.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear what, his side of the story was, but he never called back.
Right. My position is that I am for the president. That's it. I will do everything I can to help President Obama get reelected. I am for the president. If it means that, I'm going to be persona non grata among, the David Parker faction, so be it. I don't care because they're not important to me. Let me tell you what's important to me. What's important to me is my country. What's important to me is that we keep North Carolina blue. What's important to me is that we get the right person in to the White House so that we can continue to do the good things that we've been doing for our country. Okay, yes, I've been mad at President Obama. I've been mad at him for many things. But the bottom line is this. The bottom line is when I sit down and I weigh the pluses and the minuses, the pros and the cons, I cannot imagine losing our country to any one of those Republican idiots, particularly Mitt Romney. So I ask everyone, search your conscience. Tell me, and tell yourself, look yourself in the mirror, and tell yourself, who are you? Are you for the president or are you for David Parker? Because it's one or the other, guys. It's one or the other.
David Parker is for David Parker.
Absolutely. That's the way I feel. And everyone who voted for him, everyone who voted for him to stay, y'all need to sit back and think. I've had people ridicule me and say, you don't know what you're talking about. I've had people ridicule me and say, you know, you're saying that the money won't come. Well, it's here. You know, they're opening up an office in Rowan, or they're opening an office up here or there or the other. And I said, yes, because those were already in the works. But any additional money, you might want to stop and think about it. And now when you think that the DNC has pulled its ad, and when you think that North Carolina is not a host state, oh, my goodness.
How can that even be? I can't even imagine that. So when the people from North Carolina come to the convention, where are they supposed to go?
Well, we don't know. We don't know where they're being housed. I believe that their housing is still going to be the very good housing because that, you know, they have good hotels and stuff like that. But as far as where they're going to be on the floor, now generally the host committee, the host state, is on the floor, front and center. Okay,
right.
That's where Colorado was in 2008. I don't know. No one said anything about where North Carolina is. Heck, we could be in nosebleed country for all we know. We don't know. Because just imagine this. Just imagine this, okay? If North Carolina isn't David Parker as the chair shows up, where is he going to be? Front and center. Where do you think the cameras are going to be focused?
Oh, please. They won't even show the stage.
Do you think that it's going to be a cluster, all right? Because everyone will be wanting to talk to David Parker about the sexual harassment thing. And then I'm not convinced that everything is out. You know, here it is. It's only the end of May. I'm waiting for the other shoe or shoes to drop yet from this scandal. Okay? Something else could come up in June or July or even August, right before the convention.
That's right. Absolutely correct. That's the other thing that I'm thinking about. What is the position when we go to the convention? After the convention, all these other states, they have places that they give celebrations at, they give meetings, they all have their places to go. So
We're at NASCAR.
What?
We're at NASCAR with South Carolina, Georgia, and Tennessee or Kentucky. Yeah.
Well, that would be more people than NASCAR's had in the last 2 years.
Think about it. Think about what we're lumped with. We're lumped with the red states.
Yes.
We're lumped with the states that are definitely not going to go blue.
So,
okay?
It's just outrageous.
We have been put in a position of non-importance. It is a slight. And anybody who's politically savvy will look at this and go, oh, well, gosh.
Right.
You know? Gosh.
Well, we have a caller that might want to ask you some questions here. Hold on just a minute. Let's see who this caller is. Hello, who's this?
Hello, Mr. Lawson.
Yes, sir. And who is this?
This is George Gaffney calling from New York, trying to find out how the South is going to, how we're going to rise and fall with the South.
The South is going to rise again. Hey, George Gaffney, how are you? How's New York? What's the weather like up there?
Oh, well, it's been raining, but I think it's going to be hot all week. So a little bit of
wonderful
Southern weather down here.
There you go. Well, you know, as far as this particular situation is concerned, George, I mean, the only thing that can happen is one of two things. Either the Council of Review takes it in their hands, but somebody has to make the complaint, and I believe somebody will, or some people will, or the grassroots has to rise up and say, since David Parker is claiming that it's the grassroots that has swept him in, then it is only the grassroots that can sweep his ass out. Excuse my French. Did I say that? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Did you bleep me? Did you bleep me?
No bleeping here. You say what you mean, and it's heard by everybody.
I was going to say worse, but now I'm embarrassed. So.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. That is the only thing. And I'm
praying and I'm hoping that what I am saying resonates with your listeners. I'm praying. George, let me ask you, did what I said,
Well, I have to say, I call into the show regularly, and I just called in, so I haven't been caught up on the whole conversation.
Uh-huh.
Well,
we'll let Michael fill you in.
Well, yeah. Now George is a graduate. Yeah, tell George, tell Grace we are a graduate of.
Chapel Hill.
Yeah, I'm adjunct faculty at Chapel Hill. Associate professor at Chapel Hill. Oh, yes, indeed. You know, doing everything I can to create trouble, right?
Well, see,
class of 96.
That's right. Oh, really? Really? Okay. Well, good for you. I'm a class of way back, honey. I'm way, way back. But I'm not a graduate of Chapel Hill. I'm a Medical College of Virginia person. So,
okay.
I go back way, 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 way back.
What's going on? Fill me in again.
Well, we were talking about what you were talking about was the problem that we've having in North Carolina with the Democratic chair. Now, you've always asked me about fill you in on what's going on in the Democratic Party. Well, Miss Grace Lehm Galloway is one of the premier leaders in the Democratic Party here in North Carolina.
A grassroots person, because I could care less about a title. Okay, in fact, I try to avoid getting titles as much as I possibly can, because they're a burden, you know?
And so, is there any question you'd like to ask Grace, George, about the Democratic Party?
Oh, were you discussing like an issue? There's a conflict or something?
Yes, well, the convention is going to be here. Are you going to be down here for the convention? Is your father coming up?
He might. I don't know.
Yeah, well, he's in Greenville, right?
That's right, Greenville, South Carolina. But I doubt he'll show up.
Yeah, well, you know.
But anyway, the convention.
North Carolina is the host state for the convention, and generally, as a host state, we're given special rights and special privileges. Okay, and so if we have parties and. You know, every convention you have parties, and states are grouped together, and they're grouped together, and you kind of look at the grouping to figure out how important each individual state is. Well, Denver was always Colorado when I was there in Denver in 2008 was grouped with some of the bigger, more important states like Florida and Illinois. Okay, the bigger states. Because Colorado is the host state, so it's grouped with the more important states, California, right? So here, we, North Carolina, we're the host state. Guess who we're grouped with? South Carolina, Georgia, and I think it's Tennessee or Kentucky. All the flipping southern states that are definitely red. And what does that tell you?
So what do you mean? What does it mean to be grouped with them? You mean you sit together at the convention or?
Well, it means, no, our parties, our after the convention parties, okay?
Each one of them have their own place, but we're the host state, and we don't even have a place.
We don't even have our own place, right. So we're lumped with those things. Uh-huh. You know, in 2008, we shared a facility with Kansas, which was great because we got Catherine Sebelius. It was awesome.
Right.
Really great. You know, and Kansas is pretty important. Kansas was President Obama's grandparents they live and where he spent a lot of his childhood.
Right.
So that was pretty important for us. Very important for us.
Yeah.
But now, to be lumped with South Carolina, you know, Georgia, and with other red states,
where we don't have any major representation except for in Georgia, we have. Representative in South Carolina we have Clyburn, and in Georgia we have what's the other representative? Major representative, I forgot his name, but none of those other places. And hold on, we got.
But let me ask you this: which group is gonna have the best barbecue?
Oh, see, now you're talking.
Now you're talking dirty, okay? Now that's, of course, it's North Carolina. Come on, man.
Whoa. We have another caller there. Who's this on the line?
Belinda
Kendall.
Yes,
how
Michael
are you?
Lawson. I am so much better now that I'm hearing your voice. Oh, my.
I know you are. Of course you are.
Hi, Belinda.
We have Grace Lean, the chair of Cabarrus County, on the line. And you were asking me the other day about the convention. Anything you'd like to ask Grace about the convention coming up in Charlotte?
Well, I think,
it
didn't become a problem until yesterday when I tried to pick my daughter up from Myers Park, and I couldn't cross over Providence Road. So
and
it
why
did
is
nothing
that?
Because the vice president was coming through.
Oh, right.
He
was
coming from Erskine Bowes' house, so they had it blocked off from Old Providence to downtown. I'm like, is this a prelude of things to come now?
Probably.
Yeah.
All of downtown will be blocked off. But you know, never mind the traffic. But the fact of the matter is that we have a political situation that needs to be resolved. And Brenda, did you just tune in, or did you?
I just tuned in, and it's interesting that you're talking about this particular subject because I was concerned with the transit system. Someone said that they're going to actually close off the transit. So where are they going to put all those people so they can continue to work and catch their buses?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't know. I don't have the answers. I don't have the answers to that at all.
And I haven't heard anything to the contrary what's going to happen yet.
Wow.
Yeah.
We've got Eastland Mall that's just sitting there.
Well,
the
Eastland Mall. See, that's why it would have been good if they would have built the train instead of coming down where it did, where I don't have that many riders. If it went from the airport down the west side out to the university, everybody could have taken the train directly downtown.
Exactly, but they actually build the transit to people that, you know, that have cars and not to people
that
don't have cars.
Right.
Well,
but Michael, tax dollars.
Michael,
yes,
I have to run.
Okay.
I have to run. I am sorry, but it was a pleasure.
To Mr. Galloway. Say hello, Mr. Galloway.
And the baby. I will.
Okay.
And Brenda, it was a pleasure talking to you. Yes, of course. Brenda, pleasure talking to you. And George, pleasure talking to you, too.
Yes, ma'am.
Michael will fill you in on any of the other gory details, okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you, dear.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I'll see you. Bye-bye. Grace, that's the end of Grace's Corner for today. What now? We have a young man on the phone here, Belinda.
Mm-hmm.
His name is George Gaffney.
George Anthony?
And George Gaffney. He's calling from New York City.
Uh-huh.
And,
hello.
He is a young comedian.
Okay.
He is a comedian in his own right, and he has performed in many of the places in New York City. Where have you performed at, George?
Oh, I do a show here every month. It's called the Cult Comedy Picture Show, and we make funny videos and politically themed comedies, post them up on YouTube, do stand up here in the city. So just calling to see if the Democrats are going to carry North Carolina this year or what's going on.
Well, the problem is, that's the problem, and we should add that Grace involved in that. The problem is that the Democratic Party is not in flux. They are flat out of order.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, we have someone else on the line here that I would like to chime in on this. Hold on just a minute. Let me answer this call. Hello, who's this?
Hello.
Hello, Lee?
Yeah.
Okay. I have, this is Lee Little, ladies and gentlemen, who is the chair of the African American Caucus in Union County. And I had a question from a caller, Lee. What, Georgie, rephrase your question again.
Well, I know
North Carolina went blue for Barack in 2008, and I'm wondering what the status is on the ground over there.
Well, we're in chaos. We're not in chaos in Union County, but the state party is in chaos because of the controversy that's going on with David Parker. But, you know, I'm an optimist, and I believe that that North Carolina will go for Barack Obama because there are so many constituencies that can't afford to vote for a Republican candidate in light of what they're attempting to do or in light of the policies that they're attempting to implement. It's going to be a contentious and nasty election, but in the end, I believe that Democrats or progressives will prevail in this state and that Barack will carry the state. It's up to us to get the vote out. I mean, that's the main thing. Republicans are attempting to subvert the vote or mitigate the vote, actually, to prevent people from voting. And it really is a disgrace what they're doing at the state level. And I believe it will harm us financially because from what I'm hearing in the wind, the campaign, Barack's campaign, is already pulling money and financial assistance away from the state. The DNC has pulled most of their ads from North Carolina, and you know that's going to be disastrous in one way. But like I said, we control the ground. We're going to go door to door. We're going to make phone calls. We're going to get people out to vote. They have more money, or they'll have more corporations that are vying to get the Republican in. But in the end, it's about who comes out to vote. And I believe that between women, Hispanics, and African-Americans, and progressive Europeans, that we will prevail. And Barack Obama...
Do we anticipate more Hispanic voting this year than it did in 2008?
I really do, and have a vested interest in coming out to vote for Democrats this year because the things that they care about most are, you know, the Republicans are trying to take that away from them. So I truly believe that we will prevail in the end.
The blended,
all these different issues that are important to Hispanics, Republicans want to cut those or not let them come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Belinda, you have anything to ask Lee?
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, when we're talking about our Hispanic brothers and sisters, and I think it was Eric Hoffman that says, never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. And when the Republicans you know, just kind of bashed and did a whole lot of things, it really made it better for us as far as getting our president back in office. And I do believe we'll have a strong turnout with our Hispanic brothers and sisters. And believe it or not, silently, a lot of our white Americans, brothers and sisters, they also believe in Barack. Mitt Romney just don't do it for me. I just can't put my finger on it.
There is a major, major culture out there, and I haven't even gone into all the inherent racism that is not even, you know, it used to be subliminal, but it's not even subliminal. It's not even subtle. It's just outright there.
Yep.
I mean, well, we had this fool, Mike Kaufman, from Colorado, who said the other day, because he was now Colorado is not a ultra conservative town, but where
right.
he was, where he was making this speech, it was for the fundraiser for the Albert County Fairgrounds, at the Elba County Fairgrounds, in which there were all these major donors, but they were all ultra-conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy said, I don't know whether Barack Obama was born in the United States or America or not. I know, Coffin said, but that he's not, in his own heart, he's not an American. Now,
wow.
He said this and did not know. It was a 12-minute speech. He didn't know that somebody was taping it. And then when it was sent back to him, he says, he couldn't answer. It was a deafening silence. So what happened was they were trying to get a hold of him, and this young man who works for Nine News out in Colorado was trying to get a hold of him, and he couldn't get a hold. Nobody. This man, Kaufman, I mean, he is so much on the air that, I mean, sometimes people think that he's waiting outside the newsroom just to get his face on the TV. And now they couldn't find him for a couple of days. They were looking all over.
Interrupt the enemy when you make a mistake.
Well, so what happened was that that when they finally got a hold of him, when he finally got a hold of him, they had to almost bushwhack him outside a fundraiser that was being given. And his answer when he said, well, do you have anything you really think that Barack Obama was not born in the United States of America? And he says, well, I misspoke and I apologize. He says, oh, okay. He says, do you believe that the president doesn't share your belief in American exceptionalism? And he says, well, I misspoke and I apologize. He says, well,
wow.
Did you think that you could get away with saying that in a conservative room, and you didn't think that anybody else would hear it? He says, I misspoke and I apologize. He says, are you going to answer any questions I'm going to ask you? And he says, I misspoke and I apologize. So the man was taking the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, give me a break. So the problem is that these people are not, they don't even care anymore. We have these people elected to office who do not care. The problem with them is they have a black man in the White House. That's the only problem, sleeping in the main room. That's their problem.
And it's sad. I haven't seen so much change, since O.J. got away. Was found not guilty from strangers, the way they treat you since he's been in office. I think him going in office actually yanked the cover on who people really are.
They are ranked. They are yanking the cover off themselves. They, it's like you remember in the movie with Michael Myers, Halloween. He when the guy went downstairs from the bedroom where he had his girlfriend, goes downstairs to get a beer. Michael Myers kills him and puts the sheet over his head and comes upstairs, and the girl says, oh, stop scaring me. That's not scaring me.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Then he took off the daggone sheet, and she screamed. Well, they don't care. They took off their sheet, and they don't care.
That's true.
This is simple as it is, and they're not going to change it. I mean, you thought the Bertha thing was over. Now this man, Mitt Romney, is having a major fundraiser with the birther-in-chief, Donald Trump, in New York.
Wow.
Georgia? Well, where is he having this? Where is the, it's going to be a Trump Tower, I imagine? Have you heard anything?
Well, I'm a little embarrassed to say I'm hosting it in my apartment here.
Are you? How much are the tickets?
Well, for friends, you can come by. You can come through. I'll let you in.
Just bring a couple
But, I got to say, if Hillary was in Barack's shoes, say she had won, I don't think that it'd be all hunky-dory and they let up on anything, or John Kerry or anything else like that. I think if he's black, if he's Asian, if he's this or that, whatever, he's one step closer to raising taxes on millionaires, and he's going to get clobbered no matter what his color. I mean, I'm not going to say that racism doesn't play a part in it. I think they feed into that because that's a low-hanging fruit on him. But they're going to be disrespectful that horrible way about any candidate. It's just so easy to pick on that one. And okay, we got the racist, so you know, let's dig a little deeper because that's easy for him. Mm-hmm. So there's no behaving with them.
Yeah, but you see, but Georgie, they never said, even though they impeached Bill Clinton, even though they jumped all over Hillary Clinton for health care, they never said he wasn't an American.
From Kenya.
No, that's right. They never said that. They never said he was.
Well, his
name
is Bill Clinton. I mean, if his name was, Bill Congwai, they probably would have said something.
For shock.
Well, yeah, but see, that's just enough. But you see, they have gone over the deep end. No one in the Democrats had ever yelled out to George Bush, and we know that he was up to his eyeballs in shenanigans and illegal activity when he made any of his State of Union addresses, that he was a liar, and we knew he was. That never was said. Barack Obama has not started any wars and gotten people killed. This man has gotten people killed, George W. Bush. Well, not really him. Dick Cheney did that.
Well, the thing is my dad used to always say, no matter how good a person look or, you know, how many degrees they have behind their name, he had come to the conclusion that PhD means post hole digger or push here dummy. He said that when people open their mouth, you can locate them. And I said that to say is that you can see people that you've always held at a certain level for whatever reason. And when you ask them and say, why don't you like our president? And all they can tell you is that he wasn't born in the United States. I mean, that's sad. Donald Trump doesn't realize how stupid that made himself look if that was his only, against Farah. I think people are opening their mouth, and we're able to locate who they really are. I mean, what difference does it make?
Well, we have someone else joining us here, and who is this?
Diane Little.
Hello? Diane Little. You wouldn't happen to be related to Lee Little, would you?
Yeah, we're kind of married.
Married?
Is Lee Little from Wadesboro?
Ansonville.
Yes.
Ansonville. Well, we went to school together.
Yes, we graduated the same year, Belinda.
Oh,
no, you're much older than I am. I think I was in middle school when you graduated.
Okay, well, I don't know about that, but...
Yes. I was probably in the fifth grade.
So what's this, old home week here?
Yeah, Anson County brings some pretty good people down there now.
Absolutely.
You may sit on the front porch and wave at cars going by while we're shelling peas, but we're pretty smart.
Wow.
Yeah, I sure did that. I saw that a few times driving down there.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
That's right. I mean, at one point, I thought it looked like a daggone barroom with all the peanut shells on the ground.
That's true. That's true. That's how we grow them.
Michael?
Yes, ma'am. Diane Little now is the first vice chair of the Union County Democratic Party.
Wow, that's good.
And I don't know if you had a chance to speak to hear Grace. Did you have a chance to hear Grace today?
I heard it all, and I want to work my way backwards, because first I want you to know that I'm optimistic, and I'd like to answer George's question.
Okay.
He asked, will North Carolina turn blue? And I'm not as optimistic as Lee, only because we have a state party, and the state party, of course, is the machine that drives the consensus for the state. In total disarray, we have distractions of redistricting. We've got things like voter ID threats. We have Democratic candidates without name recognition. We have a lot of work to do without the other stuff. And then when I heard Grace say that even though the convention is in North Carolina, that we're not going to, the president and his wife are not, they're not going to attend the North Carolina party. We're not on the list of one of the host states. That's embarrassing.
Oh.
Wow.
To have the DNC pull their ads from North Carolina, and for President Biden, who was here the other day, not to be introduced by the state party leader, by the state chair, which is David Parker, he was there, but they refused to acknowledge him, and the OFA director actually introduced Biden. So, George, what I'm saying to you is that we are being shunned by the power brokers in the National Democratic Party because of the craziness that we have allowed to happen on the state level. And it can be easily fixed by leaders who are not demagogues, but it's not being fixed. So even though Lee has said our ground game is what's going to push us, that excitement, that incentive to inspire people is not there. So if we do do it, it'll be because we are that bad, and we have a great ground game, and everybody feels the way that we do. But it's going to be doubly hard, George, for us to do that because of everything that's against us from a social realm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these voter ID
laws. Why do you think this
laws.
Happened, Diane?
Why do I think it happened?
Yeah, why weren't we not introduced? I mean, how can something that big take place and we're not a part of the meeting?
Because we have allowed some slimy stuff to be interweaved into this convention. When the vice president comes to the state and he is pressed, he is inundated with questions about a scandal that happened on the state level, as opposed to asking him questions about education and the convention. I'm with Grace. If when we have the convention, if David Parker is present, the cameras are going to be on him and
That's
the
true.
Scandal. So I'm sorry that has happened. I'm not a feudalist. I don't think that it will certainly damn North Carolina to Red Stateville, but I do know that this is going to be one of the hardest campaign times of my lifetime, because it's going to be that much harder to get things done.
Georgie?
Yeah.
You got to answer some questions, open your eyes a little bit, what's going on here. The problem is that we have a state chair here who put himself, as Steven Seagal said, above the law and above everybody. He put himself above the Democratic Party. He put himself above the state party. He put himself above the president just to hold a position as a Democratic chair because he actually screwed up.
I can't see why there were no stop measures in place for this to get that far out of hand.
Can you believe there is nothing in place? The only thing that can be done is
crazy.
To take this man to the Council of Review. The Council of Review, see, everybody's elected. Just like you, the president or a senator or a congressman, you just can't say, oh, you're fired, get out of here. They were elected by the people. So it takes an election by the people of your peers to get rid of you, just like the party chair, I or you, by myself, we just can't say, hey, you get out of here. It has to go to a Council of Review that reviews all the allegations, and then the Council of Review will pass their decision, send it to the State Executive Committee, and then the State Executive Committee will take a vote on it.
Well, now is this
that
something you would
done.
Do? Well, I'm listening to Diane
and
the passion about this. Anything done now is going to be more of a distraction, isn't it?
Well,
I think
all
chance.
No, we have a window to get this done, and I say the window is by June, end of June.
Mm.
And now normally the Council Review, it takes a year and a day to move off a dime, but the problem is, and I've been to a few Council of Review sessions. I've been involved in at least two Council Review claims, and the problem is that, but they've always been within the county itself. When you talk about the state chair, we're not talking about little Mickey Mouse running the corner grocery store here. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the chair that we're hundreds of or millions, tens of millions of dollars are coming into. So that is something that I think the Council Review would put together and right away would see and hear it. So I think it could be done in 6 weeks.
George, did you see the John Stewart piece? I think it might be on YouTube, with the chair from the North Carolina Democratic Party, David Parker, giving he was actually giving descriptive reasons for the so-called sexual abuse by Jay Parmley. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
You got to see that, because John Stewart ran it. So it's gone national. It's gone viral. And if you can see it, you'll see why this has become such an embarrassment for the state. Because
what is the YouTube site? Which one is that?
It's John Stewart from
John Stewart.
Yeah, John Stewart's one of his episodes that has to do. He actually played the press. He played the press interview that David Parker had with the press, where he was explaining away the actual allegations line for line. Like, this guy Ortega says that Jay Parmley actually rubbed his shoulders every time he came by, and then they would switch to David Parker explaining that away. Well, Jay is a very affectionate person, and he'll stand behind you and rub your shoulders.
Oh,
and then he went through the statement about the guy saying that Jay touched his leg near his groin or whatever, and then they switched to David Parker in the news conference saying, well, you know, they were in a car and Jay turned around and Ortega was asleep and he took his leg and shook him to wake him up, and it was hysterical. If you weren't personally involved, it was hysterical. I got more calls that night from friends.
Oh, my God.
I got more calls from friends. This was on John Stewart, the Comedy Channel.
Okay, how long ago was this? It had to be within the last month, right?
It was right after the county conventions, after the scandal hit on the 14th, on the 12th of April, and I suspect it was a week after that it just went viral. So, you know, that's something we need to look at.
Well, I only follow Republican sex scandals.
Oh, I hear you.
How old is this event? How long ago is this supposed to happen, this particular event they're talking about? Was this something that happened last year, 2 years ago?
Last year, December of last year. December of last year.
Is that why they're shutting North Carolina in the with the parties and stuff? Is that why you're drawing a link to that?
Yeah.
Or is that all beforehand?
Mm-hmm. Well,
it had nothing to do with the convention
scandal itself. Yeah. I think that the reason that the party or North Carolina caused the Council of State, including our governor, sent an appeal to David Parker when he wouldn't step down and said, "Please do it. You're hurting the party." And so, of course, now he's not endeared to all of the candidates that are running. And that would, to me, mean my president as well. And so there's a little fist fight going on between the two entities. And David is standing his ground, and he's saying that he resigned, but then he takes back his resignation. And I don't know whether parliamentary procedure or the plan of organization was followed during that meeting, but it seems to me that if he resigned, and he wanted to come back, and there was a group of supporters, then he should have been challenged in an election format like every other candidate that was there that day.
Lifetime movie couldn't even write this.
Lifetime movie probably will write. Now, to me, if you say you're resigning, you're history. You're resigned. You don't take that back. And you think that later, well, you know, I resigned, but I really think I can help the party. I'm going to run again. And if the people want me, they'll elect me again. But this man was had no intention of resigning because he had people there with David Parker buttons on. So he had the group, everybody coming in, they had David Parker buttons on. So he knew that he wasn't going to resign.
Well, look at the logistics of the meeting. First of all, they called the meeting. It was Mother's Day weekend and graduation weekend, so half the people, the members of the SEC, weren't even there.
You know, they're not going to be there.
So that he could corral all of his people and get all of his people there because he knew that most people that regularly attend the SEC would not attend that meeting. That was by design. He had no intention on resigning. Resignation. He didn't really want to resign because he's addicted to the power.
Well, you know, speaking about YouTube videos, Georgie, has done a few YouTube videos imitating Mr. Steele, Michael Steele, and he looks exactly like Mr. Steele. Georgie, tell us where we can see these videos at.
I'll tell you, then I got to run. I got to set up for a show I'm doing tonight. If you go on YouTube and type in I'm Michael Steele, my video should come up. The channel is called Cult Comedy Pictures. That's what we call alternate comedy here in New York, cult comedy. That was my first little big hit. And all the videos are there. And we show them in a live show here in New York City once a month, which is going quite well.
That's very good. Well, I know you got to go, Georgie.
Yeah, it's unusual for someone to make a Michael Steele rap video, but that's the kind of guy I am.
And it is funny. It really is funny. And he looks just like Michael Steele, except a few pounds lighter. But he even shaved his head to look like Michael Steele. So it's unbelievable. So
you're going to need to do a David Parker one as well. Just pray for us.
You know what? I'm going to look into it and see what I can do.
Yeah, look at that John Stewart video.
As long as it ends well.
Yeah, well, it ain't
over
yet. It ain't over yet. Georgie. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Take care.
All right. Belinda.
Yes,
tell us what you're up to.
I'm finishing up a book, and I got voted for Who's Who in Black Charlotte, and I am a business manager now for an internationally known cosmetic company that is sold in department stores. So I've got a couple of irons in the fire.
And what's the name of the entity in the department store?
I can't call the name because I didn't get media approval.
Oh, okay.
But it's just a lot of things going on. I did make contact with Pastor Thomas Robb. And I'm still working on getting that interview. He is the National Director of the White Knights. He's actually a minister that is out in Branson, Missouri. Very nice. His whole team is very nice when we talk. So I'm working with a video company to go out and do a documentary and just kind of sit down and have a one-on-one with him. And he's very open to it.
Well, I'm sure he got nothing to hide now. They're all open to it. I mean, you see it every day.
They ain't
hiding no more. They're out there.
Sure.
I mean, they talk to the president all the time.
The biggest thing is trying to get a security team, because every time I approach someone, I say, listen, you know, how much is this going to cost for you to fly out there with me? And they're like, I'm not going out there. So that's been a problem.
There's no security team in Branson, Missouri?
Yeah, but nobody wants to do an overnight stay. Everybody wants to do a day trip. I'm like, well, you just stay out there and hang out. And it's like, no, we're not.
Well, you can get Lee. Well, you should go out there with a Lee.
See, there, now Lee can't hear.
See?
She's act like everybody else I ask. I'm not going out there with you fooling up with
Diane, are you there? Diane?
My husband is not going.
No. We'll wait for it to come on HBO, but he ain't coming out.
There you go. There you go.
No.
Yeah. Will this be HBO or Lifetime?
Actually, the person
or
I'm working
sci-fi.
With. I know, right? The production channel wants to see if they could sell it to HBO or either a couple of other stations, you know, the History Channel. But it's just, you know, several questions that I want to ask. I guess I don't have a lot of fear. And, you know, he's willing to talk. But I just don't understand how you can be a pastor and at the same time the national director of the White Knights.
Well, this guy here in Charlotte, who is the pastor here in Charlotte that they're all, that they really got on now? He's not saying nothing. He was,
He
went
to Hickory. Is it Hickory or Catawba or something? I don't know what he was thinking, and I don't know, you know, sometimes we say it out loud. And we shouldn't, but that's something he should have never said.
Well, if he's what he said, he should lose his 501c3 for that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Did
that's
you hear bad. That? Did you hear that, Diane?
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah,
and
bad.
He should lose his 501c3 because there are some regulations when you have
mm-hmm.
a nonprofit organization, and there are mm-hmm. public things. That the public, there are some documents and things that the public has a right to know when you're 501c3. They're trying to change the matrix, and they make you stupid smart. They make you think you're stupid when you're smart
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
you know better, but you can't believe the gall of people to actually do these types of things in your face. We've allowed them to change even the way things are said. I heard someone say last night, well, I misspoke and I apologize. I said, no, you lied. Say
mm-hmm.
the word. That's not
they
a misspeak.
Call it what it is.
Right.
Right.
If I say I had a tomato instead of a potato, that's a misspeak.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't misspeak a thought.
No.
That means you lied.
No.
What else are you going to be, are you now involved with, Belinda?
Say that one more time.
What else are you now involved with?
Just doing community things. I'm still working with homeless families and things like that. But I had to step back. I had to realize that when you're working with people that are desperate and in great need, you have to be careful how you handle them because you can get attached real fast. So I had to step back. My daughter, Frances, now calls me Frost. She said, Mommy, you're real cold. But, I got to do what I got to do to protect my mind. So I'm still doing things like that and working with Michael Lawson. That's like being on the front row of the Jerry Springer show most of the time. So that's about it.
Yeah. Well, what's wrong with Jerry Springer?
No.
What's right with him?
Right. Not like that. What's right with him? Nothing.
Yeah, what's right with him? Listen, Michael, you guys were talking about going back towards the beginning of the of the session, you were talking about the Ryan Plan. And, of course, that's weighed on my heart because, you know, we're former military, and you were discussing the defense cuts. One of the things I didn't hear was that although all the cuts are going to be on the boots on the ground, there's no defense spending cuts. And so in
his
plan.
Oh, no, increased, right.
Yeah, they increased, continued. I mean, we're talking $1 billion increase for fiscal year 2012. This is what he wants. And so even though they're taking from the soldiers and the families and taking away from the programs that these guys come back injured both physically and mentally, there's not going to be enough money to go around to help them with those types of things. I mean, we've got soldiers that, you know, because Lee is part of the American Legion, and we've heard of soldiers who've come back home and their house is in foreclosure.
Oh,
and those types of things. Yet we can, with a straight face, say in a plan, on paper, unequivocally, $2.2 billion for defense spending.
Well, listen, the Danny Hoyer, Senator Danny Hoyer, Representative Danny Hoyer from Maryland, he said that the federal employees are ready to participate in helping to bring down the deficit. But don't ask them to do it alone. Federal employees have already contributed $75 billion to deficit reduction through pay freezes and previous pension contribution increases for future employees. No other working Americans have been asked to do that. Now, here's a problem that I have. If the deficit affects everybody, why don't everybody, including private business, take a cut? We're all living in the same country, breathing the same air, with the same government. Why should federal employees who are working stiffs like private employees, why doesn't everybody take a sample of this? Because in World War One and World War Two, everybody contributed to the war. Every last single person, whether you were in private industry or in public industry, you contributed to the war effort. Now, we don't have Americans that even defend the country anymore. We have the same group of people being sent over to Afghanistan and Iraq 5, 6, 7, 8 times. There's no more draft.
No.
Nobody contributes. Nobody helps out this government with a war anymore. Nobody has a daggone pork chop on the grill. Nobody has their hands getting dirty. We have these same people fighting and dying for us, and we don't risk a thing, but we have plenty of complaints.
And
this
Mitt Romney, it has four tours right there. If any of his sons, and here's a man who wants to be my commander-in-chief. He wants to be the president of the free world, and he has 5 sons, I think, and he refuses to allow any of them to go into the military. I wonder why. You know what that is? That's unpatriotic. He has a sense of entitlement like all the other corporations and all the other people who are making millions and millions of dollars on the backs of the working class. And that's why you can have somebody who is the, what is it, he's the House Budget Committee Chair, Ryan, who can put out the garbage like his plan that abolishes Medicare and slashes the middle class services. That's why you can say those type of things, because you have a sense of entitlement. They've gone way beyond the American shores. They're no longer patriotic. What they've done is gone to these third world countries where they're hiding their money, and they see if you subvert the vote, if you get people into a level of desperation and put them in an income where they're fighting to go to work, they don't have time to think about who's making all the money. Look at, we should be spinning out of control because of what happened with J.P. Morgan and Chase 2 weeks ago. They made a oops of billions of dollars with my money. I have an account at Chase.
But you see, the thing is that they distract us with Dancing with the Stars. Different people being celebrities.
They don't distract me with Dancing with the Stars because I've never watched
me
it.
Me neither. But it's amazing when you have these conversations with certain people, they can't hear you, but they can tell you who won or lost on Dancing with the Stars or The X Factor or what Kim Kardashian is doing.
Oh.
You speak very passionately, and I hope one day to meet you, and I understand what you're saying, and you're making a valid point. But sometimes you're just going to be the long soldier, and it boils down to people just don't want to act right. And as people today, we're so easily distracted. I mean, very easily distracted. So, if you know, you can stand on a soapbox, you can stand on the top of Bank American building, and they still can't hear you because it's almost like we have blinders on, and we're distracted. Oh, we got to get home. Criminal Minds is coming on. You know, nobody cares anymore, and it's sad.
It's sad because then they vote against their own self-interest, and then they suffer a little more. You know, it reminds me of A Tale of Two Cities, where you have you're going to have a proletariat.
Yeah, I remember that.
The proletariat and the very, 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 very rich. That's crazy. In a democracy, that's crazy. If that's what we're supposed to be, then...
Well, you're right.
You know.
But I'm going to say this, and I got to get off the phone because they're paging me, and I'm acting like I don't hear it, so they're probably going to bust up the store in a minute. But, Diane, what you're saying is a very valid point. But, again, I know that the presidential election is very important. But I wish that we could come together like this when our judges are running and our city councilmen, because their decisions affect us right away.
Absolutely.
And the White House is a more of a trickle-down effect, but their decisions affect us so much faster. I live in South Charlotte, and I've seen million-dollar homes. You know how you go by there and praise the God just dropped the money out of heaven. But it's sad when you look at the MSL sheet and the house is $1.3 million and tax value is $400,000.
Yeah.
And you've got kids over in West Charlotte don't even have a sidewalk. And you've got people in North Charlotte and East Charlotte that are paying their true tax value, but only the south side is reaping the benefits. So it is, you know, they're talking about bringing a baseball team here. And I think the sign they built to say it was coming would have cost more than putting in a sidewalk where those two kids died. And it was still tragedy. I mean, you know, you can do all of these things, but still you can't get to the point because we're so easily distracted. And that's,
And the community that we live in, if we don't make it better, then guess what? It will get worse.
Exactly. I make my kids listen to the BBC. I make them listen to talk radio. I said, you know what? God
are they listening to me? Do they listen to me? You need to let them listen.
I'm going to let them listen to you. But I gave them a perfect example. I was sitting on a board one time. It was in an African-American church, and we was discussing the movie, and the person that was sitting beside me was held a high position at CMS school board. And all the black people attacked him. He said, you know, CMS is unfair because you guys will give our black children homework knowing they don't have computers. And that's when I raised my hand and I said, you know, it's interesting how on Black Friday, when you can go to Best Buy and all these different places and you can get a laptop for $100, it's all rice and no gravy. But when the tennis shoes go on sale for $200, it's all gravy and no rice. So we are distracted. We don't have priorities. But it was wonderful talking to you and my homeboy, Lee. I haven't seen him in years. His father was really to be terrified. He was mean to me. Maybe because I kept talking in class. You know, I was distracted. But with Michael, let's get together.
All right.
Yeah. All right. You guys take care.
We'll get together. We need to, some other stuff you were talking about, we need to get together and do that interview.
Okay.
With the book.
All right. I'm not going to take you out there because you mess around. I'd be done called a case out there. But okay.
I like to see him. Maybe I should come there with a white sheet on.
No, Michael. You're about like an old refrigerator. You can't hold nothing. So, no. You stay here. I'll call you. Thank you, guys.
All right.
Miss Diane.
Yeah.
What are we going to do to straighten out this Democratic Party here?
Well, I think that if you're an SEC member and you're dissatisfied with the outcome, there are ways to lodge complaints and do due diligence.
How about sending Mr. Walker out there with his gun?
We could do that. And we know that somebody will get shot. But
I mean, it's all right. Because we have defense. Stand your ground law. I mean, he could claim that in a micro minute.
Well, I feel very threatened right now. So, you know, anything is possible. But people should do their due diligence and lodge complaints if they are unhappy. with the outcome and with the way things are being done, make sure that Robert's rules and the plan of organization was followed, and just, you know.
And how they make their complaint is they call their local Democratic Party, county party headquarters, and say you want to make a complaint, and they have to send it to the Council Review, and they'll send it directly to David Parker, too, because he has to get a copy of it. But but if you're an SEC member, you can call the Council Review and tell them you're sending this, and you want to get this heard before the end of June. Before the end of June. If enough people call, they'll get it done.
The state convention is June 16th. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the state convention is June 16th, and there will not be an SEC meeting that day because of the surprise, what I call Mother's Day Massacre meeting on the 12th, and so we will have a state convention. And at that time, anybody who is an active Democrat who's there can bring it up on the floor of their discontent or questions or whatever. This is an open party. And we are transparent. And so there's ways to find redress.
Okay. Well, we got only 10 more seconds. I want to thank you for coming on. And
you're welcome. Thanks, Mike.
The thing is that what are you doing for Labor Day?
Labor Day.
Memorial Day. Memorial Day.
Oh, because Labor Day I'll probably be in September. I'll probably be in Florida. Memorial Day I'll be in Charlotte with family, enjoying some barbecue and a couple of games and some good music.
Okay. Well, I want you to hear this as we go out. I want to say happy Memorial Day to everybody, and make sure that you do something about this party. And I have something from the president for you all to hear right now.
On July 1st of this year, the interest rates on Stafford student loans, the same loans that many of you use to help pay for college, are set to double. And that means some hardworking students will be paying about $1,000 extra just to get their education. So I've called on Congress to prevent this from happening. What we've said is simple. Now is not the time to make school more expensive for our young people.
Oh, yes. You should listen to the president. Or as I like to call him, the Preezy of the United Steezy. Things are heating up inside Congress's chambers behind all those closed doors. So the president made a few discreet calls across the aisle. He said, hey, let's get together on this one. Without an affordable Stafford loan, where can a student turn? The Pell Grant is a beautiful thing, but with college getting more expensive, is it enough by itself to satisfy all your collegiate needs? Oh, hell no.
Oh, hell no. If Congress doesn't act, it's the students who play. The right and left should join on this like Kim and Kanye.
Now, there are some in Congress who disagree. They say keeping the interest rate low isn't the way to help our students. They say we should be doing everything we can to pay down the national debt. Well, so long as it doesn't include taxing billionaires. But their position is that students just have to make this rate increase work. Frankly, I don't buy it.
The Barackness monster ain't buying it. We all know our legislative body is in the House tossing and turning late into the night. But still, Republicans disagree and could even filibuster. But if they do, the president said they're gonna feel it, Buster.
The GOP is steady saying no, no, no. They should start something new to do like Tim Tebow.
The reason it's so important to keep down costs is so we keep college affordable.
And the president knows his stuff, y'all. That's why they call him the POTUS, which means person on top. What is it?
Jimmy, POTUS stands for President of the United States.
He's the POTUS with the most.
Let's keep the rates down on college loans.
Stop the loan you say may be your own. Yeah. Let's get it together and make our lives better. Cause the college degree is more than a few letters. If college don't rise, go ahead, find it.
It's how we slow jam the news.
Oh, yeah.
Give it up for President Obama.
Have a happy Memorial Day. This has been The Last Word.
So this turned off.